Yeah, so there's a lot of excitement in the air, which is good. Hopefully when I finish, everybody will still be excited. So we're going to continue with the series that we have on Acts and sort of the launch of the early church. And I just kind of like the book of Acts because it's just full of lovely little stories, some of which we can kind of bypass really quickly if we're not careful. So we're reading Acts chapter 5 today from verse 12 to 16. It's very short. Thanks, Dave. But I'm sure I can still find something to talk about. So Acts chapter 5, 12 to 16. It's 1097 in your church Bible. And it goes like this. The apostles performed many signs and wonders among the people, and all the believers used to meet together in Solomon's colonnade. No one else dared join them, even though they were highly regarded by the people. Nevertheless, more and more men and women believed in the Lord and were added to their number. As a result, people brought those who were ill into the streets and laid them on beds and mats, so that at least Peter's shadow might fall on some of them as he passed by. Crowds gathered also from the towns around Jerusalem, bringing those who were ill and those tormented by impure spirits, and all of them were healed. So it's quite a short bit of text, but it's quite remarkable in terms of what is in there. And I like the book of Acts. I had an old Bible, and in my old Bible it says the Acts of the Apostles, and that's kind of how I think about it. It's the actions of the apostles, the actions of the early church. And so the key for me was the fact that this is just them talking about what was their everyday action of the church. So it's similar to basically someone coming into this service and taking minutes about what actually happened in the service, and that's what's been put into the book. So that was quite interesting for me because some of the things there were quite brave, quite amazing to see. And so effectively, this was the reality TV of the first century, right? But not like our reality TV where there's a lot of staging and a lot of acting and a lot of exaggeration. This was just a normal day for them, basically. So, like I said, one of the things I noticed from looking at this series that we've been going on is effectively to do with the bravery of Peter and the actual church. This bravery sort of started from even the very beginning. So when we look at what happened when Peter gave his first speech, you know, he stood up in the midst of quite a lot of people, because the church was about 80 people plus at the time. So to stand up before 3,000 plus and give a speech is quite brave, I think. But it wasn't just the bravery of standing up and giving that speech, but it was actually the content of the speech as well, because there's a lot of things that he could have left out because they could have been seen as offensive to the people that he was preaching to. But he was preaching from the power of the Holy Spirit, so he just preached completely clearly and completely. So he gave the gospel just as it was. He didn't kind of hold back on any aspects of it, which I thought was quite brave and quite interesting to note, basically. And also, I think that the idea that he could kind of look everybody in the eye and say, "You killed the chosen one of God," comes across to me as very brave at the time. And we all know, because we have the opportunity to read, that the response was people were added to the church, and quite a lot of people were added to the church. But at the time, he didn't have that advantage. He wasn't able to kind of read and see what happens next. So he was standing in front of everyone just as he was and giving that preach at that time. And the crowd responded in a specific way. Well, interestingly, they could have responded in a different way. And it's not something that was unfamiliar to Peter as well, because he had seen the crowd respond in a different way when, you know, Jesus was brought in front of everyone, and the expectation was that, oh, this is an opportunity to get him off. But actually it was an opportunity for something else to happen. So I'm sure in his heart, in his mind, as he was giving this sort of speech, all of that must have been racing through his mind. But he just stood there and he gave the speech. So that's one of the things I want us to notice, is that he actually gave the speech, because it was very easy for him to have not given that speech. So that's the first bit. After that, then, you know, we come onto the story where sort of Peter met with this blind man at the Gate Beautiful. And again, you know, those actions were very brave, you know. Tim put it quite well when he said, you know, it was a divine appointment. So this man has been going over to that gate every day, you know. But this specific day, you know, there was an appointment that was made, and he sort of met with Peter. But Peter had to be brave, because he had to do something, you know. The man was there, and the man's expectation was, you know, give me some silver, give me some gold, you know, help me to get through today. But Peter was able to bring something that was a lot better than getting through today, but only because he was brave. So if we see in our text, it says basically in the very first verse, actually, all the believers used to meet together in Solomon's colonnade. And I started thinking to myself, well, why is that relevant? Why is that important? You know, why does that have to be part of the text? And actually, where is Solomon's colonnade? You know, so then I kind of found out that basically Solomon's colonnade was basically a little porch in the actual temple. So they were all meeting together in the temple, in a porch in the temple. So basically, sort of like the foyer of this church was where Peter was meeting with the people. Now, what was extraordinary about that was the fact that they were meeting effectively in the porch of what was considered the authorized church, what was known as the authorized church at the time, so of the temple. But they were preaching in the name of Jesus, who was someone who the Sanhedrin, which is the rulers of the church at the time, were not exactly, you know, fans of. So they were all meeting in the porch of the church, talking about someone who the church says they shouldn't talk about. And they were doing it very bravely, I thought. I know I wouldn't have been inclined to do that. But then obviously they must have been acting on something beyond what they would normally do. So I thought I was quite brave, because, you know, it was in front of the actual authorities at the time. And as if that wasn't bad enough, we understand from the verse then that, you know, people were scared to join them. And that's part of the reason why I thought it was quite important to talk about why they were there and what they were doing, because part of the fear to join them was the fact that if you joined them, you were almost like joining a rebellion. You were joining a teaching and a movement that was against what the authorized church was about at that time. And so what I found interesting was everyone who was joining them was effectively making a statement by joining them. And it was a very brave statement, because it was a statement to say, I am part of this. And what I found interesting with that is it doesn't leave you the opportunity to be vague. You can't be a part of them and not a part of them. You had to be fully committed and fully a part of what they were doing. So I thought the early church must have been full of a lot of really brave people. That's what was going through my head, I kept thinking. But I guess the question that kept going through my mind was, what made them so brave? You know, what made them so able to take these risks? What made them so able to commit fully to this movement, commit fully to the church? And so I started thinking of some early examples of the things that they'd done. and I thought there's a lot of factors that can encourage bravery, as it were. So I remembered a different story, which is also in the Bible. And again, it's another one of those stories that's very easy to kind of breeze past if you're not sort of looking for it. So in the book of Luke, chapter 8, in verse 43 and 44, we come across another story. Now, the interesting thing about this story is it's not even meant to be part of this part of the Bible, according to my Bible, because my Bible says Jesus raises a dead girl and heals a sick woman. So she was just an and. So she wasn't even sort of the main part of it, in that sense, as it were. So anyway. So it says just a little bit earlier in 42, as Jesus was on his way, the crowds almost crushed him. So basically the crowd was so many people around him, they almost crushed him. They were all around him. They were really sort of pressing him, as a crowd. And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years, but no one could heal her. She came up behind him and touched the edge of his cloak, and immediately her bleeding stopped. That's it. You know? And so the story is interesting because basically it's, like I said, it's just in the middle of everything that was happening at the time. So there was a crowd, Jesus was there, and Jesus responded to say, oh, who touched me? And his disciples were like, what do you mean, who touched you? You know, there's thousands of people all around you. People are touching you all the time. They're crushing you. So, you know, what are you talking about? Effectively, they were a bit confused about why he was saying someone touched him. But the point of the bravery here was that the lady had an illness that really, according to the laws of the time, did not allow her to be in public, you know. But because of her desperation to be well, because, another part of the Bible, when it talks about this story, talks about the fact that she's been everywhere. So she's basically been to the doctors of the time. She spent the majority of her money. She's trying to get herself better in any way that she can. She was open to everything that was possible, but she was not getting healed at all. And so in this particular part of the Bible, it says that basically she'd determined in her mind that if she could just touch Jesus, if she could just touch the hem of his garment, she would be made whole. And so she had to go through that pressing crowd to be able to get to Jesus, you know. So she was a very brave lady to be out amongst the people, but beyond that, she was pushing through the people to get to what she needed, to get to what she wanted, and what she has been wanting for 13 years. I mean, I don't know if you can think about that, but bleeding for 13 years will take its toll on literally every part of you. It will take its toll on your body. It will take its toll on your mind. It will take its toll on every part of you. And so the desperation was, you know, has reached the end, effectively. But it was interesting that for her to be brave, she had to have a certain level of confidence. Because basically, she's been everywhere, and she's been to multiple prophets that were touted in those days as people that could heal. She'd been to doctors. She spent quite a lot of, in fact, all of her money. So she knew that, you know, not everything out there worked. Not everything out there was real. So for her to have a confidence that just touching the hem of the garment of Jesus would heal her would have come from somewhere else. It would have come from something else, but it came from someone else. So when we look at that story and how brave she was, I think actually her confidence came from the fact that she knew that there was thousands and thousands of people who were able to say, oh, I got healed by Jesus at that time. And so the confidence that she had basically came from the evidence that she had that Jesus was real. and that Jesus was able to heal. And if we go back to sort of Peter and the early church, we kind of ask the same question to them as well. Say, what made them so confident, and what made them think that the people who just effectively killed their leader would not kill them? You know? What made them brave? You know? What made them brave was the man that they healed a few days ago at the Gate Beautiful was actually now part of the church. So every time they came on Sunday, they saw this man who was blind from birth and who used to sit every day hoping for a silver coin or a gold coin, jumping around, praising God right amongst them. You know, and that gave them a confidence and a reminder that God was there, that God was real and God was around them, and the evidence was that man. So if we look further into our verse, we find then that basically, like I said, everyone was sort of scared to join them. But beyond that, where am I? Right, so going on in verse 14, it said, nevertheless, more and more men and women believed in the Lord and were added to the number. And it says, as a result, people brought those who were ill into the streets and laid them on beds and mats so that at least Peter's shadow might fall on some of them as he passed by. And that, for me, was just another sort of story that reinforced the bravery of the people, because basically now, We've gotten beyond the point of Peter having to hold the man's hand and pull him up in the name of Jesus. We've gotten to a point where God was doing a new thing. God was actually able to use Peter's shadow to heal people, you know. And again, all of this in front of the Sanhedrin, in front of the recognized church. But the interesting part was the fact that it wasn't the signs that actually convinced people that Jesus was real. Because if it was, then obviously the authorities that were looking at this and seeing what was happening would have been convinced. So it wasn't that. It was obviously more than that. It's more than the science, because even today we have that issue in the sense that, you know, if somebody gets healed, people can, if you allow yourself, you can use your mind to sort of explain it away, you know, and explain it, oh, you know, you were lucky, or your body did something that it doesn't normally do, or whatever the case might be. But the reality is that God heals. But the interesting part for me was the fact that, not just the fact that they were brave, and not just the fact that they had confidence, but who they had confidence in. That was the interesting part for me. So they had their confidence, and their confidence is good news for us, because their confidence came from Jesus. Now the good news is, when we look at this Jesus, when we look at this Christ, we see someone who was quite happy to sort of break fish and bread together with Peter. We saw someone who went to the grave and came back. We saw someone who they could believe and have confidence in. And in the words of Paul, Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever. So that's the good news for us. The good news is that he just doesn't change. And he doesn't change his mind either. So he's the same, and he's doing the same today, just as he was doing then. So for me, the actions of the early church, or the everyday actions of the early church, are not something that we should look at as a removed example from God's church, because he is the one that built his church. And so today, just as much as yesterday, just as much as tomorrow, Jesus is still doing the same thing. So let's just look at that last verse and just see. It says, crowds gathered also from the towns around Jerusalem, bringing those who were ill and those who were tormented by impure spirits. And all of them were healed. For me, that's an interesting element, because it doesn't say some of them were healed. So I had to read it twice, actually, just to make sure. In different versions, just to be sure. And it always said all of them were healed. Now, the good thing about it was, because it was Peter's shadow that was healing them, Peter didn't actually sort of, you know, control his shadow and kind of go, you know, make sure it doesn't hit that guy. Make sure it doesn't hit that guy. Because, you know, you can't control your shadow. It kind of goes where it goes, right? So, in other words, Peter's involvement in it was very very limited, effectively. But the other thing as well was, you didn't get a scenario where the disciples sort of went, okay, you know what, before you can put your mat down, or before you can come onto the street, just in case Peter's shadow might fall on you, let's kind of do an assessment of the illness that you have. Let's see, you know, what kind of, oh, no, that one's a bit too much. Why don't you go over there? Or, you know, that one's too light. You can live with that. So it wasn't anything like that at all. It was just basically a case of come with an expectancy. Come with your heart open. Come with your eyes open. But come with a desire to see something different. Come and be brave. Now, the good thing about it was, being brave in that situation was easy, because if you're not, you just wouldn't come. Because you wouldn't come because, first of all, as I said, you come in front of the whole church to say, you know, I'm hanging out with these people. But you just wouldn't come because you're coming in order to say what they're doing actually works. But I think the key thing is, you just wouldn't come because you wouldn't have the confidence that something new, something different is going to happen. So today we have a lot of excitement, you know, we had lovely worship, but we've got to sort of ask ourselves the question, you know, and the question is, how brave are we going to be today? We're going to have some time in ministry, we're going to have some time to pray, but how brave are we actually going to be today? You know, the good news is that there's always tomorrow. But why do tomorrow what you could do today? So the question is just, how brave are we going to be today?